Hi, I'm Justin Gregg. I'm an animal cognition researcher and author of the book Humanish: What Talking to Your Cat or Naming Your Car Reveals About the Uniquely Human Need to Humanize. Humanish is a book about how anthropomorphism impacts our relationships with all living things, from animals to other humans, as well as inanimate objects, AI, and even natural phenomena like hurricanes. Anthropomorphism often gets a bad rap, so I wrote this book to help us reconsider not just how powerful a force anthropomorphism is in our minds, but how useful and fun it can be. I'm about to hit you with five key insights from the book. Insight number one: anthropomorphism is a cognitive bias that has been subconsciously influencing your behavior. Human brains evolve the perceptual system that's wired to seek out the presence of other human minds. We're quick to spot the presence of human-like eyes and faces, human-like movement, and anything that resembles human language. All of those are an indication that we've encountered another human being. And since human sociality is the key to our species' success, this perceptual system is both powerful and sensitive. But it can be easily tricked by things like puppy dog eyes or kitten faces that resemble the faces of human babies, causing us to want to treat our pets with the same kind of moral consideration we'd give to a fellow human. Or, if you slap a pair of eyes onto a Roomba or a delivery robot, our brains trick us into interacting with these mindless robots in a way that we'd normally reserve for human-to-human interaction. This is what anthropomorphism is, a cognitive bias that causes us to treat non-human things like a fellow human, even though we know they're not. And it's almost impossible to not feel the tug of anthropomorphism when interacting with a living being or object that moves and acts, talks, or otherwise looks like a human. Anthropomorphism lingers in our subconscious, silently guiding our behavior. Insight number two. Far from being something negative, anthropomorphism evolved to help us navigate the world more effectively. Now, you might think treating a non-human animal or object like a fellow human is a delusional, unhelpful behavior. And to be fair, scholars throughout history have labeled our tendency to anthropomorphize non-humans as a foolish mistake. But why, then, is anthropomorphism so pervasive, seen in all cultures throughout human history? The answer is that anthropomorphism evolved as a method for human beings to easily spot the presence of fellow human beings. It makes us sensitive to the potential presence of another human mind. And since human cooperation is the key to our evolutionary success, anthropomorphism has been a boon for us. Sure, it gives us a lot of false positives, but that ensures that we'll never miss the chance that another creature that looks, acts, and talks like a human might in fact be another human. As far as cognitive biases goes, it has served us well over the years, even if it makes us a bit weird in that we treat our pets like little fur babies. Insight number three: understanding how anthropomorphism works can actually improve your relationship with animals. The question is, when we anthropomorphize our animals, is that causing harm to either us or the non-human beings that we're anthropomorphizing? Well, it sure can. If we over-attribute human-like emotions and thoughts to our pets, assuming that they have, for example, a capacity for revenge or deceit, then we might get angry with them, maybe even punish them. When we use anthropomorphism to guess wrong about what our pets are thinking, we sometimes treat them unfairly. And this certainly happens quite frequently. But on balance, it appears that treating our pets like little humans is generally beneficial to both our pets and to ourselves. They receive more pampering than they really need or even want, but it's often a net positive for everyone involved. The key to not causing harm to the animals in our lives through anthropomorphism is to take a step back and ask ourselves if maybe we're wrong about what is really going through their minds, to wonder if our anthropomorphism is tricking us into treating them in a human-like way that is harming them. But if there's no harm, it can be perfectly okay to let anthropomorphism wash over you and enjoy the benefit that it brings to both you and your pet. Insight number four: anthropomorphism is fun, which is why we use it all the time to interact with inanimate objects, something that might have evolutionary benefits. There's an argument to be made that our tendency to anthropomorphize non-living things, like our cars or our musical instruments, is in fact a behavior that was shaped by natural selection to increase our fitness. As you've now heard, it's so easy for us to get swept up into treating objects like a fellow human. Many people name their cars and spend an awful lot of time washing them or buffing them and making sure they're in good condition. This is at least partly driven by the fact that anthropomorphism generates a parasocial relationship with objects like our vehicles. The benefit to us for doing this is that our cars, our tools, or musical instruments that we feel obligated to care for will last longer and be more beneficial to us than those objects that we don't feel any anthropomorphism toward. It's entirely possible that our capacity for anthropomorphism helped our ancestors care for their tools, which is one of the reasons our species became so successful. Insight number 5. Marketers and propagandists have been using anthropomorphism to sell you things and manipulate your political views. It's not all good news when it comes to anthropomorphism. Marketers and product designers are well aware of the fact that humans are drawn toward objects that have human-like characteristics. That's why the Coke bottle, which was famously designed to resemble the female form and nicknamed the Mae West bottle, has been helping Coca-Cola sell soda for over 100 years. Marketing campaigns and cleverly designed products often take advantage of anthropomorphism's grip on our minds, generating positive associations with products or brands that are given human-like qualities. Politicians and propagandists are also aware of the power of anthropomorphism, using cute animals in their political advertising. Think of the sheer number of political leaders throughout history who've been photographed alongside their adorable pets. And anthropomorphism has an evil twin. Dehumanization, which is the ability to ignore the human-like qualities of our fellow humans, making it easier for us to harm them in times of conflict. As easy as it is for us to anthropomorphize animals and treat them like humans, it's even easier for us to dehumanize fellow humans and treat them more like animals or objects. In this sense, both anthropomorphism and dehumanization have been part and parcel of the advertising and political propaganda worlds for many an age. Now that you know how anthropomorphism can be used against you, it's easier to both notice and resist this cognitive bias that makes you want to either buy adorable-looking furniture or treat your foreign-looking neighbor ever so slightly less well than you otherwise should. I hope you've learned something cool about anthropomorphism, a much maligned psychological disposition that's actually both fun and beneficial, as long as you're aware of how and why it's influencing your worldview. Thanks for listening, and I hope you read and enjoy the book.